You're listening to Privacy and Security Insights, brought to you by Picasso.
Welcome to Series 2, Episode 3 of the Picasso Podcast Series. I am Steve Wright, and I'm delighted to be joined by Gillian Cozzi. She is the Global DPO for Virgin Atlantic and an award-winning data protection officer with over 20 years of practical experience working in the world of data protection, legislation across a whole variety of industries, and brings a wealth of experience. And the great subject that you brought to us today, Gillian, is the value of an experienced DPO. So what a fantastic article. So first of all, let me start by thanking and welcoming you to this podcast today.
Hi, Steve. Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be here with you.
Brilliant, brilliant. So I loved your article. I thought, you know, once again, it was fresh, it was innovative, and it was honest. And, you know, that's always a good thing. So before I get into the questions, I just want to say for our listeners today that these are the thoughts from Gillian and they do not represent her employer. So it's important to get that disclaimer. And I imagine you've been doing this quite a while, so you've seen some good days and you've seen some bad days and you've seen some excellent compliance and some not so excellent compliance and poor decisions. So I thought your paper was very good. And I know that obviously you were the winner of last year's Picasso Europe Awards in London, which was in the category of Outstanding Data Protection Officer Award. And I think that was well deserved. And your paper just kind of reflects that. So I loved it. So thank you very much. It did make me smile. So obviously you talk that there was a heavy Harry Potter influence coming through. I did wonder what was going on, but I liked it. And you talked about clairvoyancy and I thought, oh my, where are we going with this? But what I loved was the beginning where you were saying about blockers to this wonderful industry that we're in. So my first question, Gillian, is, many DPOs, I often hear this, are seen as blockers rather than enablers. What strategies would you use to shift this perception in the business that you work within for the benefit of our listeners today?
Very good question. And my strategy is simple. I've had years of doing this and years of being called a blocker. And as you and I both know, that is intrinsically not what most data protection officers are trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And I find it quite offensive too sometimes, I won't lie. My strategy is be friendly and approachable to everybody, mm-hmm. top down, bottom up, and being friendly and approachable with just a little bit of scary mixed in. So that people know that they can approach you and that they can approach you easily, that you're not going to be harsh with them or, you know, too legalistic with them in some ways, but actually that you will help them with their issue or their project or whatever question it is that they have. And it's this piece about, I go on the journey with the companies and the operations I work with, embed myself into the operation, and I work with them. The sooner they come and they chat, the quicker we can, you know, guide and find ways for them to do things, which mm-hmm. provides a more positive experience for the operation as a whole. So for me, it's working together. It's this essential piece, gaining the trust of the people that you work with, your colleagues, your peers, so that they know that they can come to you.
I love that. The positive experience and gaining the trust is absolutely crucial. I mean, you know, just in terms of you've obviously got a very customer services way about you. You know, that's clear. It comes across in the way you handle yourself, but also the way you write as well. It's kind of, you're putting yourself in the third party's position, you know, the recipient's position. So thanks for that, Gillian. So that kind of connects with the next question, really, because it does, and you alluded to it about understanding the journey and that kind of thing. So your article mentions about how DPOs must understand their company's people culture. So how do you capture that? What the culture of privacy within your organization and this people culture? culture. What do you mean by that? Can you just expand on that? What's that mean, Tilly?
So for me, each industry invariably has a different culture attached to it.
Okay.
And how the industry generally operates. So for me, the banking insurance industry as a whole has quite a different look and feel to it as the travel industry.
Okay. Yeah.
And so when you go into these operations, people work in different ways. In some industries and some organizations, people would like to be more formal. And that's how they want to have documented meetings and meetings in formal spaces, etc. In other operations, there's a more fluid, informal approach that the people themselves make in the culture of the organization and how the people themselves wish to work. As a DPO, my job is to help and support and guide the operation. And I take it upon myself to go in and figure out what that culture is. How do they need me to be? So this is why I land up with wizardry and morphing and doing all sorts of things and becoming chameleons, because you almost have to mirror what the culture is in order to then gain the trust and the respect and the confidence of the people.
Okay. Yeah. I get you. That does make sense. So you're almost a bit of a chameleon in as much as you're taking the background, surroundings, the environment, the culture, and then adapting your approach to meet with that. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then the more you do that, people then respond back to you. And they then come on board your train a little bit, and you have this beautiful relationship that then starts to work, and that then builds a privacy culture.
Yeah.
Because for me, a privacy culture is not one in which an operation is scared to talk to a DP team or a DP. I love being involved, intrinsically involved in the operation. You know, I build up these privacy cultures where I don't even have to be in meetings anymore. And I've got my colleagues going, what would Gillian say? Or if she was here, what would she say?
Yeah.
Which understood. I think is pretty cool. Training and awareness is obviously massive as well. And I make that fun and engaging. And it's just part of my strategy of embedding privacy culture.
Yeah, no, that's good. And if we have time, I'll come back to get your top tips at the end of this for our audience, our listeners today. But so you mentioned about a little bit about sort of the prediction. And I think this is one of the hardest parts of our role, you know, and this is back to my point about the clairvoyancy, you know. So, Gillian, have you got a crystal ball down at Virgin Atlantic, or are you what are you doing? Are you reading cards or something to, you know, how do you identify those risks? And then more importantly, what do you do about those? How do you mitigate those risks as a DPO?
I would love to have a crystal ball.
Be a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Can you imagine how dangerous that might be? But, you know, as an experienced DPO, as I said in the article, we do come with these invisible scars, and they arise from all the work that we've done historically over all the operations that we work in. When we're sitting in the positions that we sit in, we've often been there, done that, got the t-shirt several times, which lends itself to being able to see almost into the future as to what the operation is trying to achieve. So when somebody comes and goes, we would like to do X, Y, and Z, we can dredge our memory banks and go, oh, yep, we've done this before, and this was the kind of outcome that we've seen. It would be best to do it this way, or actually, I've seen it done it that way, and it didn't work so well, so let's mitigate that, and let's try a different route, go down a different channel. So that's what I mean by predicting the future. It's often that we have seen just a different iteration of what the business is trying to do.
That was a great answer. I think another one of the challenges that DPOs face, that we all face, is this question of balance, right? And you kind of alluded to it in your beginning piece, where you were saying about how approachable, making it a positive experience, that people do come to you rather than this kind of sign on the front door saying, you know, come at your peril, you're about to be privacy stamped and you'll have to, you know, I don't know, give your left hand to get approval. So you're making it positive, you're making it fun, as you said, and gaining the trust. I thought that was really good. How does an experienced EPO balance the business needs to operate profit with the necessity to protect the privacy and the rights of the individual? Because this is the conflict, right? This is the, I'm employed by Virgin Atlantic, but I'm actually a, you know, a bastion of truth or integrity around protecting this individual. So how do you get that right? What's the magic solution you can bottle up and sell?
It's a bit of trial and error, isn't it?
Okay.
I've been very fortunate. Over the more than two decades, I have been working in the data protection and privacy arena.
Yeah.
I have always worked for operations where no is pretty much never enough, and nobody wants a legal answer where it doesn't allow them the ability to move somewhere, because what happens then is the operation stops. And it's pretty career limiting, I think, if you have to try and go down that pathway. But I've been lucky. The operations I've worked in have always pushed to find that creative solution. So I have quite a lot of creativity behind me. And I use the example of a washing machine when the business comes with an initiative, and I put the initiative into the washing machine.
Yeah.
And then I throw in the data protection laws, because there's more, it's a few of those, right?
Uh-huh.
And then we throw in some human rights and some ethics and morals. Then we also throw in the commercials and profitability elements.
Okay.
And we spin it several times.
I like it.
With all the knowledge that we have and the experience, yep, and knowing the risk appetite of your organization and what your boundaries are as DPO, we then just produce something wonderful that balances the rights of the individuals,
yeah,
as well as the rights of the business as best as we can do, and come out somewhere where everybody is happy.
And that's utopia.
It's not always easy.
I didn't say easy. I'm coming to work there. I like the sound of this place. I've just got images now. I mean, maybe you should be working for Zanussi or something, because I've just got the... I've got this image of a line of washing machines with any one project at any one time where you're adding in detergent and laws and mixing in a little bit of business common sense. I love it. Great analogy. Thank you for that. I hope that's worked for our listeners tuning in today. Okay, so this question. So what ways do experienced DPOs contribute? And I'm underlining the word experience, because I think I've had a lot of people work for me over the years in my role as DPO, CPO. I'm so pleased they've gone on to be DPOs and CPOs themselves. That's exactly what you want, right? But what ways do experienced DPOs contribute to building trust in a positive reputation for their company amongst both their customers and their employees?
For me, it comes down to the balancing piece we've just spoken about.
Uh-huh.
And a customer-focused position, or an employee-focused, so a human focus. I always talk about the human. You know, what we do is all about humans. It's not about things. It's humans, and humans have feelings. And the law gives us lots of guidance and principles to do things right, and, you know, transparency and fairness and lawful, and et cetera. So for me, trust is built on a company doing what it says it's going to do.
Yeah.
So if you provide us with data, we should use it for the purpose for which you have provided that data to us. They should never be a surprise. We should always be transparent with what we do with your information. And that's what drives me. That's what drives, I believe, customer trust and great brand reputation, besides the great products, naturally. But if you could have a wonderful product that's amazing, but the customer isn't 100% sure how you treat their personal data,
gotcha,
and in which case they might go somewhere else. I've been known to purchase items from a large retailer instead of going to a different place, because they already have my data, and I would pay a bit more for that because I don't want to hand my data to somebody I'm unsure of. So that's how I approach that.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And I'm nearly run out of questions here, because this has been such a good conversation and I've really enjoyed it. So one of the questions was around this sort of example of leadership qualities that make experienced DPOs more effective in their role. And the obvious example is a crisis, you know, because we all know when an incident happens, I've been in several really large incidents like ransomware attack, everyone just runs around like headless chickens. So what are some of the leadership qualities that really differentiate, you know, an effective DPO?
Your skill set, your legal knowledge and skill set, naturally, okay. Right? In the event of a crisis. As a leader, we need to be great listeners. There's a difference between hearing and actually listening to what people are saying. And when we listen, we actually digest what they're saying to us so that we can then apply what we are then hearing to the knowledge that we're sitting with in our heads as to what that next step should be.
Right.
I think being able to influence people in the room.
Yeah.
When you are in a crisis situation with lots of people doing lots of things, it's about being able to influence that room, keep it calm. DPOs need to be calm, even though we don't often feel it. At least try to portray it on the outside that we are calm and it will be okay.
Yes.
And that we can help guide that operation. Decision makers. We have to be great decision makers.
Yeah.
We have to take information at breakneck speed sometimes, as I'm sure you will agree.
Mm-hmm.
Apply that to what we've heard. Apply that to the knowledge that we have. To be able to make quick, rational decisions. I think it's really, really important. And great communication.
Great communication. I like that. Yeah, I think what you were saying about the difference between hearing and listening is quite acute sometimes when you're sort of going into situations. You know, sometimes you've got to sit there quietly and absorb what's going on around you and the information and really try to hear. So I thought that's good example. So this is actually my final question, Gillian. Where within an organisation should the DPO ideally be positioned to have, you know, to certainly contribute to a more comprehensive strategy and compliance overview? Where would you say?
I love the question, should. And I would always advocate at exec level.
Okay.
Yep. That's the, you know, DPOs are compliance, we have legal knowledge, we do all those things. But actually, we're often undervalued in strategy and in strategy of the entire operation, not just the data protection strategy of how to make best use of the data that you are holding. You know, it's an asset. It's a massive asset. And our, you know, as much as our people are, but our data is an absolute asset. And experienced data protection officers can really make a difference at that level.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you. And I think, you know, I couldn't agree with it. I was scribbling down notes here. And it just reads like a beautiful story. I know that there's much, much more you could give us today. But sadly, we've run out of time, as happens with these events. So just closing thoughts, really, a couple of tip-top things that you would be recommending for our listeners today here on Picasso. What would you say in terms of the value of a DPO or an experienced DPO? What would you like to say to the audience? Couple of tips, I suppose, or thoughts.
Top tips. Be approachable. Be very knowledgeable. Always keep learning. There is always something to learn, and keep balancing. Always, always balance, and always advocate for the human. That's our role.
Fantastic. What a great approachable, keep learning and balance. Fantastic. Gillian, thank you so much on behalf of Picasso. Really good podcast today. I really enjoyed it. So thank you for that. And you definitely made me laugh, and I have all sorts of images conjured up in my head. So on behalf of Picasso, I just wanted to thank you today. Remember, ladies and gents, you too can be interviewed and partake in the podcast series. The whole objective of Picasso is to provide useful, practical information for our community to help advance our community. So Gillian's contribution today, like many others that have come before her and will come next, should add value at all times. So thank you again, Gillian, for today. It's Steve Wright from Picasso signing off for today. Thank you for joining us.